Hey folks, welcome into Onto Waveland. It's a Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sadik Sharma and Patrick Mooney. And we are each going to select which of the Cubs losses in that four-game series that we are. You know, I'll call dibs on the last one. Because I've squandered a lot of opportunities, you know, and they've brought me here. No, I'm just kidding. So obviously we're gonna touch on that Pirates series, which was, I think, in a lot of ways, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's exemplary of what the Cubs are and where they are, because I think that's a little too narratively convenient and a bit dramatic. But it did highlight a lot of things that we think about this Cubs team and where things are and where they need to be, and you know, all those various things is what we'll touch on. And so I want to, at the top, note a little something about particularly the series ending loss on Sunday. Obviously the Cubs had just so many chances to come back in that game, including from the very first inning, where they didn't put the foot down. They were gifted a couple runs and they left it there. Justin Steele did not have his best control, but then the bullpen was excellent from there, gave the offense, what, six innings worth of opportunities to come back. And I mean, they were 90 feet away so many times and just could not come through, including a number of key strikeouts, which of course is precisely what you don't want to see with this club. And I was reminded that as we are here in only late April, observing a team that all three of us and most fans recognized had only a shot at being competitive this year. That was as far as we would go. None of us thought this was like sort of a sneaky good team. It was just, well, you know, some things might break their way. There are some components of this team that we like and that might put a run together enough to be passably competitive come July. That was as far as I would go. And even knowing that, I am cursed every year that I feel like in April and May, at least April through May, I'm like, maybe the Cubs could be competitive. You know, like maybe they can be surprisingly good. And because I'm afflicted by that, this was true even in like 2012, 13, 14, you know, I can't get to the mode yet where I'm like, eh, you know, a loss like yesterday rolls off my back, where I'm like, eh, I just can't. It'll be months until I'm there. And so for now, a game like yesterday fucking makes me so angry. I'm sitting there watching and I'm like, why aren't you taking the extra base, Rafael? What are you doing? Why aren't you picking up your third base coach? And then I'm like, Willie, what are you doing? He's pumping the top of the zone with his four seamer every single freaking pitch. What are you possibly looking for? Frank, what are you doing? What are you doing, buddy? It's the same thing. That's his elite pitch. What are you doing? So, yeah, I was a little hot yesterday. And I get smacked around by Cubs fans on Twitter and on the site that are kind of like, well, what did you expect? This is a terrible team. And I'm like, it's more nuanced than that. Like, it's not that this isn't a terrible team. It's just, it's not a great team. It's so I'm allowed early in the season to be vexed beyond words when a game like yesterday happens, when the Cubs outscore the Pirates 29-12 in a four-game series and lose the series 1-3. Like, I'm allowed to be pissed off by that. And so I'm going to pass off to you guys for now to talk about any, you know, particulars from the series. Right? And I saw you were saying some similar things, Zadif, about how it's not a terrible team. That isn't the answer to a series like this where you're like, well, you're not supposed to feel feelings because this is a terrible team. No.
Yeah,
that's not precisely correct. So yeah,
I mean I can feel your frustration in the sense that when people like to make leaps like that and completely ignore all nuance, and this, and a weekend like this justifies that type of response. When you lose one of three to the Pirates, it's very easy to say, see, I told you this team is terrible. This is an awful team. What did you expect? It's really easy to do that, and it's really hard to combat it. And when you actually look at the team and look at the numbers and look at how they're performing, they're not terrible, but it's not what you want. I mean, being not terrible is not what the Cubs should be, right? And I understand that frustration. When you come at me with, this team should spend more, this team should have brought in more stars, I'm not going to argue with that. When you say, well, this team just sucks and this is what they are, that's where, like, there has to be some balance here, right? There needs to be some balance of how you look at this team. And what, you know, you could argue about the offense. I don't think that's the issue. I just don't. People are like, well, they clearly struggle against fastballs still. I thought that was supposed to be an issue. They're one of the top 10 teams against fastballs this year in the zone. They're still chasing that high strike. Nope. They're one of the bottom 10 teams when it comes to chasing the high fastball. Yes, there are some moments where they did that. Wilson did it in a big moment yesterday. And Brett, what you said about what are you doing? You know what Bednar is going to do. I straight up asked Frank Schwindel.
I saw it in your article, yeah. And I couldn't help myself with saying it. I saw it. But yes, go read Sahadev's article. Say what you said. It's what Frank said. I know.
Yeah, I asked him, are you just going up there against Bednar, gearing up for the fastball? Because I felt like I saw the same thing, right? Between the end of the game and getting into the clubhouse, I hadn't looked up exactly what Bednar had been throwing them, but it felt like it was a ton of fastballs. And he does throw a ton of fastballs, but what did he throw in Frank the last time Frank saw him? He dropped in a curveball first pitch strike and then got him on a splitter, got him to ground out on a splitter. So that's in Frank's head. And then he bumps three straight fastballs at him. It's just a good game plan by Bednar there. Like that's hard to combat. Bednar's got that fastball that's hard to, you know, hard to lay off and also hard to hit. We'll see if they get to him eventually, but it's that trio of Dylan Peters, Will Crow, and David Bednar that just shut the Cubs up all weekend long. It was a really difficult weekend with that trio. I mean, even like in Pittsburgh.
By the way, just because the Pirates are bad doesn't mean they don't have good individual players. Those are good pitchers. Like, they do have three very good relievers. It's just the Cubs saw them three out of four games.
Yeah, the problem, I mean, the big problem was, you know, the starters weren't going deep enough and they were giving up early leads. And then that led to the Cubs eating up their really good bullpen, which... It's always weird how people react to bullpens. Well, this bullpen will be the downfall of the Cubs. I get so much of that. I'm not sure if you guys get that, but I get a lot of, well, this bullpen is terrible. And it's one of the best bullpens in baseball right now. Again, all of this is small sample. Like, we can't, like, overreact to any of this, but the bullpen's not the issue. The bullpen is not the issue. My biggest glaring issues with this team are the starting pitching isn't going deep enough right now. Yes. And I think there's some easy corrections to that. And the defense, when Jonathan Villar is out there, is rough. And I think that's a major issue as far as how the roster is constructed. And unfortunately, I think it all comes back to Jason Hayward being on this team. And it sucks out one guy.
Yeah, can we save
that? We can save that.
Because that'll be –
I just think it's a big elephant in the room, and it's unfortunate – but that I think that's the reality when you're in the situation that the Cubs are in currently.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the Cubs at one point had like eight outfielders and like only one guy who can play shortstop on their roster. And I remember, Sadev, we were talking about this in spring training. And you're like, I don't get this. I don't get this roster, how it fits together. And without, I don't know, putting words in your mouth, you're kind of like, well, they're going to make trades. They have to work this out or, you know, make... subtractions here that, you know, whatever point this is in their cycle, like, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And you're going to see more and more kind of issues like that, because that's what this game is. You get exposed over time, and the Cubs have not, you know, put themselves in a great position. I was kind of laughing the other day. Jed Hoyer did a quick scrum with the group, and I was like, in my head, I'm like, you know, should we start booking the World Series parade yet? Like, booking tickets for the playoffs? Because it was just like all this kind of happy talk about the team. And, you know, I haven't quite seen it yet. Like, you know, the new and improved offense and some of the pitching developments. And I think parts of that are there. It's just that I think you're going to see how thin this team is. And you see it with Seiya. Like, good players cost a lot of money. Like, that's the price of doing business. And you see what happens when you make a good investment in a guy with a track record, a guy that you, your scouts believe in, that your R&D department believes in. And that was kind of my takeaway from Saturday. I know there were some commenters who felt I was, you know, too negative of pointing out certain things. But, like, days like Saturday shouldn't be the anomaly. And I'm not talking about scoring 21 runs or, you know, largest shutouts in franchise histories. It's like the Cubs should be relevant year after year after year, and we shouldn't just normalize this idea that the Cubs have only, like, one guy in the roster who can play shortstop, or that, you know, their rotation is once again looking like one of the worst in the game. It's like you kind of get what you pay for. And, you know, I don't think Cubs fans should, you know, kind of just be okay with, you know, we're going to write off seasons to kind of figure out what we got. Like, they did that when they were facing a century and counting championship drought. I just think you're going to see over time that, say, what, $50 to $70 million they could have spent without even going across the luxury tax threshold. Like, you could have patched a lot of holes that way and still done all this other stuff behind the scenes under the hood that you've been working on for years. It's going to show up. It's going to keep showing up.
That, by the way, is why it is bonkers to me. The folks who say, you know, this team won't be competitive until 24, 25, 26, whatever. I'm like, are you fine with them not even trying for next year? Even though, like, I can lay out that blueprint for you. I'm not going to do it because it's April of 2022, but, like, it isn't that unforeseeable that this team is competitive next year. And it's crazy to hand wave that away now. Like, anyway, it's a whole side point. But it goes to what you're saying, Patrick, that, like, it isn't that hard to diagnose the issues. And now, Seiya Suzuki isn't going to come around in free agency every year, but useful players will. They just cost a lot of money. And the Cubs are going to have a lot of short-term money again next year. And they will have younger players who are aging next year. Anyway, set that aside. I'm just putting a pin in a lot of things today. We're gonna have a pin episode later on. But I wanted to circle back to one of the points that both of you guys were making. You're talking about the shortstop situation and how the roster kind of looks clunky. And I think actually it ties to this conversation too. That's a lot of the reason why it was crazy when people were beefing so aggressively with the Andrelton Simmons signing. Now, we said at the time, okay, what they're really mad about is Carlos Correa. Like, what all of this about is Carlos Correa. And I think there are good reasons why the Cubs did not end up signing him that are tied to the structure of his contract. I think it really kind of sucks for the Twins, his current contract. And, you know, you're going to give up high second rounder and IFA money for that. And I just, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. So I am cool with the Cubs not having signed that deal. I hope he opts out. I hope we get to have more conversations about him in the offseason. But that need to have another shortstop on the roster, this is when we were thinking that Nico might be sort of the and one guy at shortstop, not the surefire. I mean, hey, if you want to give plaudits right now, we can give it. The dude looks really good at shortstop. That I am kind of, I don't want to go so far as to say I'm eating my words, but I had way more concerns about his ability to be a regular shortstop than appear to have been justified, because he looks really good. But that was why Simmons was so necessary, because I don't know that any of us were looking at Jonathan VR as a going to play shortstop multiple times a week. I didn't think he'd be this bad, but I don't think that he was signed to be a guy who was going to be your sort of regular backup shortstop. And since you can't currently play Nico into the ground, someone's got to play shortstop sometimes. And because Simmons is hurt, it's got to be VR. And we've seen his defense on the left side of the infield this year has been scary. Not just bad, not just disappointing. It's been like, oh my God, you can't put him out there, which is similarly unfortunate because he's been hitting well. I've loved his at-bats. Like, he's looked really good at the plate. And so I think what this is my segueing into what Sahadev was talking about that I asked him to put a pin in, and then I'll open this up to him more. The Cubs need Simmons back because they need another defender on the left side that can spell Nico Horner sometimes and help preserve his body. And also just some added defense for the pitching. I mean, I think we've seen it already is impacting the starting pitching, that got to throw some extra pitches, got to get some extra outs. The outing, you know, the Marcus Stroman outing that we just saw, different third baseman in the game at that time. Maybe that whole inning looks different. So Simmons is going to be back at some point soon. He's sort of playing in the fake games right now in Arizona. And then you also have the roster shrinking down. We're at a week to where a week away from the roster cutting two more people down, 28 man to 26 man. The balance of the roster does not make sense right now. The volume of outfielders, even after Clint Frazier goes on the injured list, does not make sense. The way Alfonso Rivas is up now, but is sitting so that both Jason Hayward and Rafael Ortega can be in the lineup instead, is galling, to put it mildly. And there are just a lot of things. And then again, when Simmons comes back, somebody else has got to get booted. And I don't know. Does that mean it's going to be Rivas going down again? As David Ross has said, yeah, you're the guy who has options. I don't think I'm going to be okay with that. I think having Rivas up and letting him play checks a lot of the boxes of what the Cubs are trying to accomplish this year in a way that playing Jason Hayward does not, and arguably playing Ortega does not. And so that is, and that isn't us buying into Rivas being a true talent 500 BABIP guy. It's not like anybody thinks that that is real. It's just he is a guy who has hit everywhere he's played, despite very limited minor league experience. I want to see it. I want to see what he can do, much in the same way I want to see Frank Schwindel. It's the same kind of idea, different type of player, different age, different future. But you want to know what they could be for you in 2023, right? So let's see those guys now, because I can tell you one guy who's not going to be a significant contributor to the next great Cubs team, and I'm sorry, is Jason Hayward. I don't understand what's going on there with that. People are pointing to his results this year, and he's got like, you know, 115 weighted runs created plus or whatever. Good, great, grand. Have you actually watched? Because if you have, you've seen that there is very little there to actually hang your hat on and say, oh yeah, he's figured some things out, he's back. No. And then if you look at the peripherals, it's all smoke. He's got a BABIP that's completely unjustified by his contact quality. His ground ball rate is back over 50%. He's striking out more than ever. He's still not walking. He's not making hard contact on fastballs in the zone. By the way, remember the conversations? I know I'm just like ranting here, but the conversations we had in the past about when he's at his best, he's going to left center. Not quite full oppo, but like left center. I remember we had this for years with him. On this podcast, we talked about it. His oppo rate this year is 0%. 0%. I know it's small sample and it's early, but zero. It's crazy. Okay. So now that I asked you to put a pin in and stole a great deal of your thunder, I think we should talk a little bit about that, the outfield, the roster construction, and how it comes together over the course of the next week, because changes have to come by the rules.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I mean, you said a lot of it there, and I think you're really spot on. And I think it's unfortunate because Jason Hayward's a good dude. He sets a great example. He's never the type to complain, or he's trying to be that guy that that Ross needs him to be, where he'll give him starts, but the second a lefty comes in, for the most part, he's going to pull him. He's aggressively pinch hit for him for the most part, which is part of why I don't think it's absolutely terrible that he sat Rivas to start yesterday, because you knew Rivas would get a couple at bats, right? Because that's how Ross is using his bench. But I get the need or the desire to see him play regularly, just in general, because that's what the point of this year is. If you're not going to compete, let's find out what you have. What do you have? And we know what Jason Hayward is. And it's just hard. It's a hard situation because he's really complicating things with the roster. You remove him from the puzzle, and it's you can go straight platoon with Ortega and Hermosillo in center. It really loosens up the DH, which gives you kind of flexibility to play like a Rivas, Schwindel, Hap mix at those at first, left, and DH. If Simmons is healthy, I do wonder how often Ross would use him at short. But if he uses him essentially like he's used VR at short, which is two starts, I think Cubs fans would like that a lot more than giving Simmons a ton of starts. But even if it were four starts out of how many games is it? 13? What are we at? No, we're at 16 games, right? 7-9 is the record, or 6-8? 14 games. No, I was right. No,
you were
7-9. Okay. So 16 games in, you know, if he's got four starts, that's perfect. That's what you want, right? You don't want a ton of starts for Simmons. Nico, like, I completely agree with what you said about Nico. He's looked so much better than what I expected. I think they're positioning them well. And the defense,
a good point, by the way.
Yeah. The defense has looked good overall outside of VR. I mean, if you eliminate VR's mistakes, the defense has almost been perfect. I just worry about the range overall. It's just unfortunate because I don't know how or when they rectify this issue. And you're right, the numbers are good enough for Hayward, even if it's smoke and mirrors, that it's hard to bring him into the office and say, sorry, man, this just isn't working out. It's a difficult situation for the Cubs right now, and one that that I'm sure Ross doesn't love.
Can I just say one thing on that I want to plant my flag? I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to write it on the site. When rosters are chopped down in a week, if the one-to-one decision is that the Cubs DFA Michael Hermosillo in favor of keeping Jason Hayward, I'm going to lose my shit. And I will say all of the kind things about Jason Hayward, about what he's meant for the organization, about his time, about his presence in the clubhouse, about his leadership, about his dedication to the community. All that stuff is awesome. But the contract is sunk and you're just choosing one-to-one for the roster. It would be... All right. I don't even have to say it. You all know what I'm thinking. It just would not be
the Cubs are
going to
make up some phantom injuries. Don't worry about it, Brett.
Do you know how much
like five phantom injuries are going to come up with? Like, oh, yeah, he's been dealing with, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Isn't it 15-13 right now? 15-13 pitchers? Pitchers are ahead 15-13 and it needs to be 13-13? Or am I missing something? Or am I forgetting a move?
Yeah.
Because essentially they need to get rid of two pitchers, right? And it would be Ethan Roberts.
I thought they were back to 14-14, but I could be wrong also. You know what? Why don't you just riff while I'm doing some quick counting?
I'll let Patrick talk. I've ranted enough.
No, I think it's pretty clear
you're right, by the way. It's 15-13. Sorry.
Okay.
Everybody stays.
I think everyone.
But Simmons eventually has to.
Yeah,
come
Simmons
back.
Has to.
Come I think
back.
Everyone can generally understand that there's going to be a point in the future where the Cubs will reach that determination. The end of April seems kind of early to me. I think you let it play out another week because a lot can happen in that short period of time. We know the phantom injury will pop up here and there. I think in general, we and the Cubs to a certain extent are kind of like banking too much on this idea of like untapped potential of like all of these guys. Like the Cubs have outsmarted the entire industry on all of these kind of like fringe roster guys. And, you know, in my conversations with Sahadev, I think some of it, you know, and Sahadev kind of clued me in on this of like, you know, the Cubs know more about these guys than we do. And like, if these guys aren't playing a lot, maybe it's because the Cubs don't think they're that good. You know what I mean? Like there are kind of elements to this behind closed doors that we're not totally privy to, but ultimately they show us in terms of how they set the lineup each day. And while there are always kind of financial decisions or lots of factors that go into it, like Clint Frazier pre-injury or pre-appendicitis or even Hermosillo now, like if they'd kind of blown their doors off, like I think Ross would be playing them more. And maybe there's something there of that, you know, they haven't quite seen it yet. And, you know, I go back to when they DFA'd Edwin Jackson, that was probably what, like a June, late June, early July, if I remember correctly. And the team was kind of getting better too. So like, maybe they give Hayward some more runway and they see where they are, and that maybe he wouldn't, a lot of this may sort themselves out if they're going to be like unloading a third of the active roster at the trade deadline too. And all of a sudden those 40 man roster spots aren't so precious, and you kind of, I don't know. That's not what Cubs fans want to hear. I'm just trying to like think this through from their perspective in a way that, you know, I don't think they're sentimental at all, but I think there's like a lot here that we can't just say that. Like, I don't know how that conversation would work with Jason Hayward, considering the person he is and the contributions he's made to the team and the city.
No, I get it. It's Patrick Mooney, the org defender. I get it. That's always the. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding because it should be obvious that that is not.
No, I'm just like
that's not the seat you typically sit in.
Well, you know, it's a lot of money. Like, if you're Jed, do you want to go to Tom and say we're paying him to go away, and then you go to Jed, then you tell David Ross, so you have to tell Jason Hayward, one of your best friends, he gone. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
But here's the thing on that, and I will not claim to know the inner politicking of the, because that can have a tangible impact on performance too. You know, like there may be reasons inside the clubhouse why Cubs are handling things the way they are, the timing with, you know, letting someone like Hayward go. I appreciate that we will always have less information than the Cubs about that. And to the point you were making about performance and the Cubs' internal evaluation of certain guys, I do also mention that often. I'm like, well, you know, Clint Frazier isn't starting. There's probably a reason for that, where the Cubs have evaluated him in a certain way, that this is how he can contribute and this is how he would maybe not contribute. Fair and fine. But my two responses, not to you, Patrick, but to the Cubs, would be in a situation where even if the chance that you might see some development from a guy, for example, like Michael Hermosillo, who clearly the Angels evaluated him the same way, can hit lefties, even potentially at a big league level, can't hit righties at a big league level. That was very clear from their use of him for multiple years as an up-down guy. And the Cubs appear to have evaluated him the same way. Fine, they might be right. But even if there were like a 5% chance that if you gave him those ABs, maybe he could turn the corner, wouldn't that be worth exploring more than the 0% chance that Jason Hayward just turns everything around and becomes a massively impactful player this year and next year in a way that transforms the way you think about your roster heading into 23 and 24. I feel like that's pretty close to zero. I feel like we as outsiders can make that evaluation. And so if you are making the decision, if the Cubs are making any of those roster decisions on the basis of performance, on the basis of not believing that some of these fringe guys could do more in another role, then I think that's a mistake. And I think that is fair to point to, again, allowing for the fact that there could be other factors at play that make the timing kind of tricky. And I agree with Mooney too. Like, in the abstract, you would not have come into this season thinking Hayward's going to get the boot by May. I wouldn't have. I think we talked about it. We're like, yeah, he's going to get a couple months at least to see how he looks and yada, yada, yada. But sometimes external circumstances force your hand. And it's going to be that return of Simmons after the roster, decompresses at the end of this month. So we'll see. Phantom injury hopefully will be the solution so that I don't have to lose my shit. But, you know, all well put by you, Mooney.
Yeah, just now thinking about it, if it's 15-13, I mean, it's Rucker and Roberts, right, that go down, and that's a simple enough move for the Cubs, and then they have a decision whenever Simmons comes back, which we're getting
and Miley and Mills,
the most,
by the way.
Yeah.
But that's all, but it's going to be,
oh, right.
But it's, that sort of doesn't matter for purposes of this discussion, right, because you're capped at 13 pitchers, and we're pretty sure the
Cubs, I think it has to be 13 and 13, right? You can't go.
I know you can't go more than 13 pitchers, but that's what I was going to ask is if you wanted, which no team in the modern age is going to, but if you wanted to go 12 and 14, you know, 12 pitchers, I think you could. I think you can.
I think you could. I think you're right. Yeah, so they'll have decisions to make there, but that's on the pitching side and doesn't, and that is going to be interesting. I don't know. What I find interesting is like, we have no idea what's going on with Simmons as far as when he's returning. We've gotten zero timeline. It's just like, yeah, he's in Arizona working. It's like, okay. And when if we ask for a timeline, no timeline. Okay. So, I mean, I have no idea what that situation is right now and when he's coming back. On the subject of Nico, just I just thought this is has nothing to do with what we were talking about, but I just have to bring it up because I just kind of love how Nico entering Friday was hitting like 220, and then by Sunday fans are like, "You can't take Nico out of the lineup," and like screaming about it, and like, if you're gonna sit anyone, just sit Madrigal, he stinks. And literally, if Madrigal has two games like Nico has, they're gonna be the same player. Like, it's just, it was two great games. I'm not taking anything away from Nico. I think like getting the ball up in the air and hitting hard line drives is his path to success, and he did that on Friday and Saturday. But like, just to suggest that Nick Madrigal can't get there, it's impossible for him to have two good games. But Nico's two good games is exactly what we should expect from him going forward. Just so typical of fans in the early going. They see that number on the screen. It's like, well, he's hitting three whatever now, so that means he's awesome. So you got to play him all the time. And Nick Madrigal's hitting 220, so he stinks.
Well, and that ignores the health stuff too, right? Like, I mean, I learned a lot this weekend from folks about how sturdy Nico Hoerner has been the last 3 years, how he's never been on the injured list, how he's never dealt with multiple injuries every year. When I dared to suggest it's a good idea to give him the back-to-back off days, because everyone was like, well, why rest him today? Tomorrow's an off day. He'll be fine.
Right,
I'm like,
well,
but it's good to give guys. Like, he's performing in part because they're being conscious of this stuff.
I do think Nico, at least on the position player side, outside of Seiya, who even while a rookie, I think was kind of more of a known quantity just in terms of his professional track record. I think Nico's been maybe the most impressive guy among that group. And I'm considering the position he plays as well as just, I mean, Sahada, if you see it, like kind of where his locker is kind of when you first walk in, like, he's kind of becoming one of those like kind of spokesman type guys. And I know that's not like a huge deal, but you can see when he talks to us, like why he's the one on the field, like directing everything or like reminding someone when they miss the cutoff man, or kind of why some of those positioning stuff works, like that involves communication and instincts and feel. And Nico has that, man. I don't know if he can stay healthy the whole time, but he's definitely, you know, opened my eyes in terms of what he can do at shortstop, even though he doesn't have the rocket arm that Javi does. Just, you know, kind of an impression of kind of who he is and how he's kind of, you know, I don't want to say grown up because he was always like super mature from the moment he got there, but just the other day at Wrigley, like when kind of the cameras are over there, he brings it up on his own of like, you know, I thought it was really cool today out the last out, you had a packed house, game totally out of hand, and people were on their feet. Like, he just is very kind of in the moment, as Joe Maddon would say, and has a good head on his shoulders. And I think a lot of those qualities could show up if there is that next great Cubs team. I think you're kind of seeing what Sahada and I have written about, those seeds are kind of being planted now by people like Nico. And I think you could see, if he stays healthy, I mean, there's a lot to work with there at shortstop or around the diamond.
Yeah, you know, I'll just echo those sentiments. I completely agree. And I think I just happened to read Ken Rosenthal wrote this, I think, over the weekend about how Buster Posey leaving allowed Joey Bart to kind of emerge from the shadows as a leader. And he it wasn't that he was it was a respectful thing, right? I'm going to keep to myself, be the young player. I'll it's not my job to be the leader here. It's not my job to speak up that this is Buster Posey's team. Joey Bart sees Buster Posey retire, understands what he needs to do. I almost feel like Nico's doing that because Nico gets so cliche, but Nico gets it. He really does. He wasn't trying to do too much when Rizzo and Bryant and Javi were there. He understood that was Javi's spot at shortstop. He understood that Rizzo liked to be the guy that that was looked at as the leader, and he just let things kind of flow in that regard. And this year, like, just talking to him, every single time you go up to talk to him, you can tell that there's something different about the way, maybe he's grown up too, because he handles us really well. The way he's always willing to chat, whether it's something inane, something very specific, if it could come off as criticism. Because I straight up told him, I was like, did you do something with your arm? Are you stronger there? Like, because I didn't think like, I just straight up told, I wasn't like beating around the bush. I was like, I didn't know your arm was as strong as that, as it is. And he gave me a very reasonable explanation, did not take offense to that. Like, some guys could have been like, what the hell are you talking about, man? Like, how dare you criticize my arm? I've gotten reactions like that, like, looking at me sideways. He did not even, there was nothing that like came across like he was even slightly offended by it. He got what I was getting at and gave me a very reasonable response. And I think that shows a lot of maturity, and you see it. You just see it in so many different ways, but interacting with him, it's interesting. And like Patrick said, if this team goes in the right direction, he's a big part of it as long as he can stay healthy.
Well, and he also is a potential great example of something that we didn't see enough of in the previous core, which was developing at the big league level. Nico Hoerner, like many of the others, arrived as a useful player. And the question is, can he be more than that? And it would be extraordinarily helpful to this 2023 team and beyond if Nico does take that step forward this year. And we're seeing it so far on the defensive side at shortstop, which, frankly, that alone is massive in terms of the value for the Cubs. But if the bat takes another little step forward, I think it goes a long way. I think it goes a long way to not proving out the new hitting development infrastructure that the Cubs have sort of propagated the last 2.5 years. But I think it just would be nice to be able to hang a hat on an example where you are seeing that continued improvement from young hitters as they come up. And, you know, like I said, Nico might be the best example of that for the Cubs. Okay, Cubs have the world champion Atlanta Braves on tap. By the way, Cubs have a better record right now than the Braves. Did you know? It's true, technically speaking. 7-9 and 7-10. So the Cubs go into the series a favorite, clearly, in Atlanta. And then we will be back at you on Thursday. And we just appreciate you, as always, listening to On to Waveland here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can catch my writing at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. And tell your friends. Tell your friends about this wonderful Cubs podcast. All right. That'll do it. Have a great week, folks. Bye.